When it became apparent he was in no hurry to leave, she opened up a little. She said, "I had a sorority sister at Hollins whose brother played for state. She was watching a game, our sophomore year, and I walked into her room. There was the great Neely Crenshaw, moving tech up and down the field, fans going wild, the announcers giddy over this great young quarterback. I thought, well, good. That's what he always wanted. A big-time hero, adoring masses, co-eds chasing him all over campus, throwing themselves at him, constant adulation. Everybody's All-American. That's Neely." 2 weeks later, I was in the hospital. She shrugged. "I didn't know. I wasn't following your great career." "Who told you?" "I was home for Christmas break," she said, "and I had lunch with Nat. He told me you'd never play again. It's such a stupid sport, Neely. Boys and young men mangle their bodies for life." "It is indeed." "So tell me, Neely, what happened to the girls? When you're no longer the hero, what happens to all those little sluts and groupies?" "They disappear. Now, that must have killed you." "Now we're making progress," Neely thought. "Let's get the venom out." "There was nothing pleasant about the injury. So you became just a regular person, like the rest of us." "I guess," he said, "but with a lot of baggage. Being a forgotten hero is not easy." "And you're still adjusting." "Yeah. When you're famous at 18, you spend the rest of your life fading away. You dream of the glory days, but you know they're gone forever. I wish I'd never seen a football." "I don't believe that, Neely." "Yeah, I'd be a regular guy with two good legs. And I wouldn't have made the mistake with you." "Oh, please, Neely, don't get sappy. We were only 16. Another long pause as they sipped from their cups and got ready for the next serve and volley. Neely had been planning the encounter for weeks. Cameron had had no idea she would ever see him again. Still, he knew the element of surprise would not help him. She would have all the answers. "You're not saying much," he finally said. "I have nothing to say." "Come on, Cameron, this is your chance to unload with both barrels." "Why should I, Neely? You're here trying to force me to dig up bad memories that took years to forget. What makes you think I want to go back to high school and get burned again? I've dealt with it, Neely. Obviously, you haven't." "You want to know about Screamer?" "Hell no." "She's a cocktail waitress at a low-rent casino in Vegas, fat and ugly, 32 and looking 50, all according to Paul Curry, who saw her there. Apparently, she went to Hollywood, tried to sleep her way to the top, got squeezed out by a million other small-town homecoming queens trying to sleep their way to the top. That's no surprise." "Paul said she looked tired." "I'm certain of that. She looked tired in high school." "Does that make you feel better, Cameron?" "I felt great before you got here, Neely. I have no interest in you or your homecoming queen." "Come on, Cameron, be honest. It must be somewhat satisfying to know that Screamer is closing in on Skid Row while your life is looking pretty good. You've won." "I wasn't competing. I don't care, Neely." "You cared back then." She placed the cup back on the tray and leaned forward again. "What do you want me to say, Neely? Shall I state the obvious? I loved you madly when I was a young teenage girl. That's no surprise because I told you every day, and you told me the same. We spent every moment together, had every class together, went everywhere together. But you became this great football hero, and everybody wanted a piece of you, especially Screamer. She had the long legs and cute butt and short skirts and big chest and blonde hair, and somehow she got you in the back seat of her car. You decided you wanted more of the same. I was a nice girl, and I paid a price for it. You broke my heart, humiliated me in front of everybody I knew, and wrecked my life for a long time. I couldn't wait to leave this town. I still can't believe I did that, Cameron." "Well, you did." Her voice was edgy, and there was a slight crack. She clenched her teeth, determined to show no emotion. He would not make her cry again. "I'm so sorry," Neely said, and slowly got to his feet, careful not to put too much weight on his left knee. He touched her on the arm and said, "Thanks for giving me the chance to say so." "Don't mention it. Goodbye." He walked down the sidewalk with a slight limp, through the gate. When he was near his car, she called out, "Neely, wait!"